We're holding on the top line of page 92, Ki Havamim Minti Rabbanon. For those using other editions, it would be the middle of Os Samach Ches. It's with the middle of Daf Yud Zayin. Middle of Daf Yud Zayin of Brachos. It would be in the middle of Os Samach Ches of Ein Yachidim. We were talking about various things that the different Chachamim said. Messages for life, messages for how a Yid should live his life, things about Olam Haba, things about the special schus of women. So now more related to that, about brachas that the Chachamim would give each other. The Gemara says, Ki havu miftiri rabbonin mibei Rab Ami, when the Chachamim were taking leave from the yeshiva of Rab Ami, the Ami lo mibei Rab Chanina, or others say from the yeshiva of Rab Chanina, Amri lehochi, they would say as follows. So Rashi says, Miftiri Rabbanan means Zemi Zeh. They're taking leave of each other. Each one is going to be going back to his country or to his town or whatever. So before they left, they would give each other the following bracha. On the other hand, the Lashon that we have here, Ami Lei Hachi, seems to imply more that this is what they would say as a bracha to the Rosh Yeshiva, Rab Ami or Rab Chanina. Anyway, the bracha was, Olam Chatira Bechayecha, may you see your world in during your lifetime, meaning your world, what's the real world of a tzaddik, is Olam Haba. So you should have this chus to see a semblance of Olam Haba already in this world. Eitz Yosef also points out that, like this, you have, as the Gemara is going to discuss soon, you have very high-level tzaddikim who don't even need, they're not even sustained from Hashem's chesed in this world. They deserve it. So therefore, in other words, Olam Chatira B'Chayecha would mean you should be on the level where what you're enjoying in this world is the payrus of your Olam Haba, rather than Hashem having to give it to you as a chesed, because you're actually of the caliber to actually deserve what Hashem gives you. And your future should be for Olam Haba. And your hope for generations upon generations, which means Marashal says, in other words, that you should have what to look forward to, not only in Olam Haba, as in where your neshama goes after 120, but also for your Moshe Mashiach and also for Tchias HaNesim, that all of those you should have coming to you. So then they continue, means the two generations, the time of Mashiach and the time of Tchias HaNesim. Libcha yeget tvuna, your heart should be thinking of thoughts of understanding of Torah. Picha yedaber chochmos, your mouth should be speaking the wisdom of Torah. So Rashi explains on all this that they were saying Beloshen Bracha, Now, why does Rashi have to mention that point? Obviously, what else would it be other than a bracha? But Slach explains, because in particular, the expression picha yedabu chochmos is similar to, but not identical to, a pasuk in Tillim. In Kapitel Mem Tes, in Tillim, we have the line pi yedabu chochmos. So therefore, you're going to say, how are you allowed to change the words of a pasuk? And the answer is, because they're not actually quoting the pasuk, they're saying it as a bracha. They continue, your tongue should be moving and then should be vibrating with songs of praise to Hashem. Your eyelids should be looking straight ahead for you, meaning that Rashi says that you should be looking in the Torah kahalocha, the proper way. You should be understanding the Torah the way it's meant to be understood. Your eyes should shine with the light of the Torah. Your face should glow like the glow of the heavens. Your lips should be giving forth, like Meloshin Neveya, like to well forth das with understanding. And your kidneys, which throughout the Gemara and throughout Divrei Chazal, we use the kidneys are used as the part of a person's mentality that gives him the ideas that filter, so to speak, like the idea is the way the kidneys in the body filter out the blood. So the same way the metaphorical kidneys filter a person's thoughts to determine what's good and what's not good. So kill yasecha, your kidneys, tal loizna meisharim, should be happy with the straight way that you're learning and you're doing the straight way, the way Hashem wants. Ufal mecha, your roots of lishmoya, divrei atik yoimin, and your feet should be running to hear the words of atik yoimin, which means Hashem. So they've mentioned a whole bunch of different body parts over here. Marsha explains, we're focusing on all the body parts that have to do with learning Torah. So the feet run to learn Torah, the eyes look at the Sfarim, the mouth speaks it, and so on and so forth. And the face shines Chochmas Adam Torah Panav, as the pasuk says. On the other hand, they conspicuously left out the hands because the hands are not really involved in Talmud Torah. Those are more involved in Ma'aseh HaMitzvos. And here they're benching each other, or they're benching the Rosh Hashiva, that he should have the schus to continue learning Torah. So therefore, they didn't mention the hands. Another one, when the Chachamim were taking leave from the yeshiva of Rav Chista, or others say it was from the yeshiva of Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, they would say to their Rosh Yeshiva the following bracha, the pasuk in Tillim, alufeinu misubalim, literally alufeinu means like our oxen, misubalim, are loaded up with heavy burdens. But as the Gemara is going to say soon, it's a metaphor for the great Talmid Chachamim and Tzaddikim who support the whole world, but there is chus. So therefore, that was the bracha that they gave them. And the Gemara teaches out phrase by phrase what was the bracha. Alufeinu Misubalim, Rav Shmuel. So Rav and Shmuel argue about that particular phrase, Alufeinu Misubalim. It's at the end of Kapitel Kufnam Dalad and Tirdim. So Va'amrila, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar. Others say Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar were the ones who argued about the deeper meaning of that pasuk. Had Omer Alufeinu Batoro Umisabolim Mitzvahs. One of them, between Rav and Shmuel, and between Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Lazar, says that it was Alufeinu. So the word again, the word Aluf can be a very rare word for oxen or that carry heavy burdens, but also on the other hand, Aluf can mean a leader. You have among Alufe Esav, and then Lahavdo, you have Alufim among the Torah. So they're Alufeinu, they're our leaders as far as Torah, Umisabolim the Mitzvahs, and they're carrying a heavy burden of Mitzvahs, and they do all the Mitzvahs. So they're our leaders in learning Torah, and they are Misubalim, they're carrying the burden of doing as many Mitzvahs as possible. B'chadama, Alufeinu, B'Torah, Uva Mitzvahs, the other one says they're Alufeinu as far as that they do Torah and Mitzvahs, Umisubalim, B'Yisurim, and the Misubalim refers to the fact that they're loaded up with Yisurim. And with that, they're machaper for the world, like we learned earlier in the Perek about the Yisurim Shalava. So Marsha explains, if we say that Alufeinu refers to teaching Torah, we find, for example, that David calls Achitofel Alufi Umiudai, my Rebbe and my confidant. So, and then Mesubolim B'Mitzvahs, we find by the Bracha to Yisachar, Vayet Shichmei Lisbo, that he bent his shoulder to the burden of Mitzvahs, of helping the Jewish people do Mitzvahs. Particularly, we know that Bnei Yisachar were experts at calculating the calendar so that they know to do the Mitzvahs at the proper time. If you say Mesubolim B'Yisurim, then you have the Pasuk Umachivenu Svolim, talking about the Tzaddik, or to a certain extent, talking about the Jewish people collectively, that they bear the burden of the pains of the rest of their of the rest of the people of the rest of the Jewish people or of the rest of the world in general. So that's the Alufeinu Misubalim. That's that part of the bracha. So they're complimenting their Rebbeim, who are Alufeinu and Misubalim, and they bear this heaviest burden. Which, you know, one idea of it is, in other words, the point is, you know, you have in the wider Goyish world, it's not always like that. Very often you have the leaders are dafka the ones, you know, who figure that they can get away with everything. They don't have to, you know, laws are for the little people in the Zuck, you know. So here we're saying on the contrary, our Alufeinu don't act that way. They have to take on the heaviest burdens for themselves. Then they continue. So now the whole pasuk goes, Alufeinu Misubalim, Ein Peretz, Ve'ein Yotzes, Ve'ein Tzvacha B'chor V'Seinu. So now, what is the second half of that pasuk? What's the bracha in it? That these Talmidim of Rav Chista's or Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni are telling their Rebbeim. They say, Ein Peretz, when the pasuk continues, there should be no breach. That means, Shaloi Tehei Sayatenu, Tesayate, Shoshol, Sheyotzim Menu Doeg HaDoeg. Our group of Talmid Chachamim should not be like the group of Shol's Talmidim, who Doyegad Doni ended up coming from them, and he was a tremendous Rosh. Why is he referred to as Peretz? Because in particular, Marshall explains, he killed Noiv Irakoyim. So therefore, he made a terrible breach in the Jewish people. And therefore, for that reason, the word Peretz refers to him. Eitz Yosef gives a different reason. We know from the Gemara in Yevamos that he was the one particularly who brought up the point that David is descended from Rus HaMoyavia, and therefore that he ought to be posel Lavi Makohol. So he wanted to make a breach and make it that David is not part of the fence, not part of the fenced in Jewish people, but rather belongs to someplace else. So that's why he's called Ein Peretz. the in yotzes, and when they continue, there should be no going out. That means shaloi tehe sayatenu to sayate shal David sheyotze men achitoyfel. Our group of chachamim should not be like the group of David where achitoyfel came out of it. Where again, both doyeg and achitoyfel, they were both big talmid chachamim, but unfortunately, they had bad midas and they were balei lashon hara and had other problems, and they both were among the people who are listed. They lost their place in Adama. So why is achitoyfel referred to as yotzes? So Marsha explains, because after all, Yotzim in Olam, he ended up committing suicide when he gave advice. So the Pesukim described in Shmuel and Sefer Shmuel, he gave advice. He went over to Avshalom's side when Avshalom revolted against David, and Achitophel joined him. And then at one point he realized that Avshalom is definitely going to lose the war. He had given excellent advice about how they could get rid of David once and for all. Avshalom didn't accept it because it was counter advice from Koshai Arki. So Achitophel realized they're not going to get anywhere, and he went and committed suicide. So therefore he's called Yotzes, that he went out, he's gone from the world. Eitz Yosef points out another reason as well. In particular, why Yotzeis Veloshim Nekeva? So he says, because what first turned Achitophel against David anyway? Achitophel's granddaughter was Bathsheba. So now, when David took Bathsheba in this way that seemingly was illegal, we know Kol Ha'Emer David Chota Eina Alatoya, but still it was very questionable. Then from then on, Achitophel had a grudge against David, and now when Avshalom is revolting against David, then he grabbed the opportunity. In fact, also Eitz Yosef brings from a Gemara that says that, it is true that he had it against him because of the matter of Bathsheba, but actually what Eitz Yosef says is something different. The very fact that Achitophel first thought, what made him think to join a revolt against David? What made him think that a revolt is going to be successful anyway? It's because he saw, with Ruach HaKodesh, he saw a simon that represented that he's going to have descendants who are kings. So he figured, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to join Avshalom's side. He'll overthrow David and kill him and become the king. Sooner or later, the people will realize that Avshalom is a lowlife and they're going to want to be rid of him. Then at that point, I'm in position. I'll become the next king. Meanwhile, he didn't realize that the what he saw with Ruach HaKodesh was true, but it wasn't that he himself was going to be the king. It's that because Bathsheba was his granddaughter, therefore his great-grandson Shlomo is going to be the king. And all the future kings are going to be descended from him. So his mistake to begin with was because of a woman, because of Yotzeis, it was because of a woman, because of Bathsheba, his daughter, his granddaughter, and that's why we use the word Yotzeis in the plural. With that said, though, so now all of this is the gersa we have in front of us. Tosfos actually says the other way around. Tosfos prefers to say that Peretz refers to Achitophel because he made a pirtza in Malchus Beis David. He breached open Malchus Beis David by joining the rebellion, and Yotzes would be doyeg because Yotzel Tarbus Ra, he went off into bad ways. He ended up, the Gemara tells in Sanhedrin how he ended up forgetting his Torah and started teaching at the Kursus, and his neshama was burnt, and so on and so forth. On the other hand, Marsha says, the Gersa that we have in front of us is preferable because then it puts them in the order of the generation. Doeg was before Achitophel. Doeg was in Shaul's times, and then he didn't even, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, actually, he didn't even live to see Achitophel, because both of them died at age 33 or 34. David was king for 40 years, and Avshalom's revolt broke out in his 35th or 36th year of kingship. So Achitophel wasn't even born until a couple of years after David was king. Meanwhile, Doeg had been around in Shaul's times, and he was the one, according to some opinions, he's actually the one who came and reported to David that Shaul was about to commit suicide on the battlefield, and I finished him off, and David had him executed. So they never actually saw each other. So therefore, Marashal says it's preferable to have the way the Gersa we have over here, that Peretz refers to Doeg, and Tzvach and Yotzes refers to Achitophel, because that puts them in chronological order. Anyway. That's a different puzzle. Yeah, that's how we know that none of them lived to be 35, right? Then when it says Ve'ein Tzvacha, so the pasuk finishes off, Ve'ein Tzvacha B'lchor Beseinu, there should be no crying out in our streets. So Ve'ein Tzvacha means Shaloi Tehei Sayotenu Kiseyayte Shalot Lisha Shuyatsim Menu Geichasi. We should not be like the group of Chachamim who learned by Elisha where Geichasi came out of it. And why is he called Tzvacha? So first of all, First of all, Tosfos says because he was he eventually became a Metzora. A Metzora, we know, has to call out Tomei Yikra. The Tomei has to call out Tomei. So therefore, he's very appropriately described with the word Svacha, crying out. Eitz Yosef makes a different point over here, which is also that the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that after Elisha kicked out Dechzi, which, by the way, the Gemara criticizes him for that, he shouldn't have pushed him away, he shouldn't have rejected him completely, he should have given him a chance. But anyway, the point is, eventually he went off the Tower of Straw. The Gemara says over there, one thing he did, he took one of the Egle HaZahav that Yerovam had set up 100 years earlier. He engraved the name of Hashem inside the mouth of the statue, and from then on it was calling out Anoichi Anoyecha. So that caused a lot more people to believe, hey, this really is a godly thing, and we should worship it. So in that way, it's Choto Machias Rabbim. So therefore, again, the word Svacha, crying out, describes him very appropriately, where he caused the Egel Azohar to cry out like that and to claim that it's a god. Anyway, so now we're saying the Ein Svacha that we daven and we bench you, our Rebbe, that you shouldn't have somebody like that in our group. And when we finish off Berchoy Veseinu in our suites, also Marsha says another reason why Svacha refers to Gehazi. Because what happened, we have the story with the Isha Ashunamis, this week's Haftarah, where the Isha Ashunamis comes to Elisha, you need to revive my baby. So Elisha tells Gehazi, take my staff and go to her house and put it on the boy's face, and that'll accomplish chesed mesim. But he tells him, ki vorech ish lo sanenu, if anybody says hello to you, don't answer him back, etc. Don't talk to anybody. Meanwhile, what did Gehazi do? The Medrash says that no, as he's going, he says hello to everybody. Everybody asks him, where are you going? I'm going to be mechaya mesim and making fun of it. So he was zvacha. He was calling out and making a pirsum of the thing, which he shouldn't, and therefore Takeh didn't work, and eventually Elisha had to go there himself and do the job.
He's making
the sound of his Rebbe, the Pashtus, and of the whole concept that you could accomplish Chesed Mason with a staff, yeah.
Or you're saying this is the greatness of his Rebbe?
I mean, we can be Malamed Tzchus on him and say that maybe he thought that he's publicizing the Ness, and that way it'll make a bigger Kiddush Hashem, but still, if Elisha told him, don't say anything, then it's not his business to start making these Kishbonis. Anyway, so that's another reason why Svacha refers to him. And Berchoy Veseinu, when we say there shouldn't be anything in our streets, that means Shaloyia Beinenu or Lanu Ben or Talmud, we should not have a son or Talmud, Shemakdiach Tavshiloy Barabim, who burns his food in public, which is a Gemara expression, meaning that he takes things of Torah and misuses them and then teaches them wrongly and then makes apikursish ideas out of them. Uncensored Gemaras have also the additional words to go in Yeshu HaNotzvi. An example of that is Yeshu HaNotzvi, and of course, you know, whether that Yeshu HaNotzvi is the same one that you can find on all the street corners, that itself is a big discussion among the Rishonim, whether it is the same one or whether it's Taka a different one. Anyway, but he's an example of somebody who was Makdiach Tavshila Berabim, because you have also the story in Sanhedrin over there, again, in the uncensored Gemaras, that he was a Talmud of Yeshua ben Prachya and went off the Derech and was Mesis and Madiach and so forth. So therefore, that he's described as Berchoy Vesein. Another topic, which is kind of going to relate to what we said before. Olam Chatira Bachayecha, where Eitz Yosef said that it meant, in particular, it means you should be on the level of the great tzaddikim who don't need to receive from Hashem's chesed. They're actually receiving from the peiros of their Olam Haba. So now, let's talk about that level of tzaddikim. The pasuk says in Yeshaya, Shimuei lai abirei lev horechokim mitzdaka. The Navi says, listen to me, you abirei lev, which can mean you strong, stout-hearted people, horechokim mitzdaka, who are far away from tzaddik. So what does that mean? Rav and Shmuel. So again, Rav and Shmuel argue on the meaning of that. That's another reason why we're bringing it over here, because we had one thing that Rav and Shmuel, or some say Rav Yechon and Rav Elazar argued about. Va'amilor Rav Yechon and Rav Elazar. Chad Omer, kola olam kula nizonin mitzdaka. What it is most of the world is sustained through Hashem's tzedakah. They wouldn't deserve if they were to be sustained based on what they deserve, then very, very few people would live up to that. So therefore, they're sustained by Hashem's tzedakah. But here we're talking about very high level tzaddikim who are sustained by their force. So Abir literally means a strong person. In other words, they, so to speak, have the right to demand of Hashem that he should take care of them, and he does because of their great level of tzidkus. So Yad Yosef teaches out. In other words, if you have a person needs to be sustained by Hashem's midas rachamim, then it's not called vizroya. If midas adin agrees that the person deserves it, then that can be called nizonin vizroya. Zroya is another word for din. So here midas adin agrees to it as well. Interesting thing, actually. There's some place in the Siddurim Daf where it talks about. We know there's the idea that the biyud nivra olam haba, the hay nivra olam hazeh. So there's a minor, and then the Siddur and Dach, without it ever develops the idea that yud is related to Gvura and Hey to Chesed, and therefore, in other words, it means that Olam Haba is a world of Gvura. But we're saying, in other words, in the sense that anybody who has a chelik from Olam Haba is mitzad Gvura, like we're saying over here, midas Gvura, midas Adin, agrees that they have the right to it. It's not just that Hashem is giving them Olam Haba mitzad Chesed; they actually have earned it. So that's one. The Idach, or the Chad Omer, the other one between Rav and Shmuel, or between Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar, says, Kol Olam Kula Nizon V'Schusam, what it means is the whole rest of the world is sustained in the schus of these high-level tzaddikim, V'Hem Achidu V'Schusam, V'Schus Atzmon Ein Nizonim. They're not even sustained with their own schus. They live very poor lives, as in fact, Rabbi Elazar himself was an example of that. But nevertheless, the whole world is sustained in their schus. So that's what we mean. In other words, according to the first explanation, we're saying, so according to both explanations, we're saying, abirei lev means they're strong people. They have a strong schus by Hashem. But according to the first explanation, they're rechoikim mitzdaka in the sense they do receive a shefa from Hashem, but not through tzedakah, but rather through midas adin, because they deserve it. And according to the other one, they're rechoikim mitzdaka, their Hashem is not giving them his tzedakah, and Hashem, in fact, is giving them next to nothing, but they're still, that through their schus, the entire rest of the world is being sustained. Kidder of Yehuda Amar Rab. And this is like what Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rab. The Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab. Every day a basko comes out from Har Chodesh, from Har Sinai, but in medicine it announces, Kol Olam Kula Nizan B'Shvil Chanina B'ni, the entire world is sustained because of my son Chanina. So this is in the time when Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa was alive, and he was the tzaddik in whose host the whole world is sustained. In later times, of course, it would be other tzaddik. But Chanina bni died with Tav Choruvim, Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos. Meanwhile, my son Chanina, he finds it enough to have one cab of carobs, which carobs are not even normal food. You have it's only like it's like the next thing up from Michael Behema, from one Erev Shabbos to the next Erev Shabbos. That's what he and his family would live on. So that's what we mean. In other words, that the Rechoik and Mitzdaka, that Hashem is not giving them its Zaka generously. They're living very poor and very difficult lives. And nevertheless, the whole rest of the world is sustained in their schus. So there's an explanation from the Baal Shem Tov that the deeper meaning of the word bishvil means in the path. Because of Chanina ben Dosa's avoda, that opens up a path, that opens up a shvil for shefa for the whole rest of the world. There's places in Chassidus where it talks about the deeper idea behind that he has this kav charuvin. You have, the Gemara talks about in a couple of places, the idea that Chad Charuv or Trei Charuv, you have 6,000 years of the world as we know it, and then there's 1,000 or 2,000 years that are described as Charuv, that the world is going to be destroyed. We're not really destroyed, but brought to such an immensely high level compared to what it is now that we won't even recognize it as a world. So therefore, so in that sense, in other words, Reb Chanina is already on that level. Even now, he has the Charuv from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, like the world he lives. He's already living in the world of Chad Charuv, or Trei Charuv. Meanwhile, the rest of us are far from that point yet. Ion Yaakov points out, by the way, that we had at the top of the Amud, does Mesubolim refer to the fact that these high-level tzaddikim do lots of mitzvahs, or that they have lots of yisurim? So the two opinions over here can reflect that. According to the first opinion, we're focusing on Mesubolim, that they live comfortable lives, and they accomplish tremendous amounts of mitzvahs. And according to the second one, we're saying that they have tremendous yisurim, just like we're saying over here, that they live very poor, they live very poor, needy lives. But the Gemara says, "Pliga de Rabbi Yehuda." Now, both of these explanations, either of these explanations, assumes that the Abirei Lev are very high-level tzaddikim. So So again, Abira means very powerful. They're very powerful high, they're very powerful tzaddikim, where they have powerful schosim that help for themselves or for the whole world, as the case may be. That disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda's explanation, because Rabbi Yehuda Fakert understands that, that the Abira Leif Fakert means low level reshoy. Because the word Abira Leif can also mean stubborn hearted people. So therefore, Da'amir Rabbi Yehuda, man Abira Leif devai tipshoy. Because Rabbi Yehuda says the Abire Leiv of that pasuk, where the Navi is telling them you better listen, that refers to the foolish Goyvoi. So who are the Goyvoi? So Rashi says they're a nation who lived in Babylon. The Gemara in Kiddushin tells us that they were descended from the Nisim. And Amar Rabbi Yosef Teda Dahomer Olam Lo Igayir Chad Diyor Minayu. You can see what fools they are, that there's never been a single Ger from that nation. If they weren't so stubborn and so foolish, they would realize the greatness of Yiddishkeit, and you'd have at least individuals from that nation that would become David. Now, so Marsha points out that if these people are Nisinim, then one second, weren't the Nisinim themselves, didn't they actually become Gerim at the time? Where the whole thing, they tricked Yeshua, they tricked the Jewish people, and they became Gerim. So what are we talking about that nobody became Gerim? So Marsha says, okay, what it would have to be is that they'd have two names. They're called Gevai because they came from the Givonim. And then the Gemara in Kiddushin mentions there were two different groups over there. There was Gevai and there was Dur Nissa. So the Gemara explains over there the Gevai are so called because they're Givonim, and Dur Nissa is called that because they're Nisim. So Marsha says, okay, you would have to say that then they went by both names. So still though, what does it mean that that nobody became Gevim from them? So Marsha says like this, to begin with, when the Givonim first became Gerim, not all of them did. Many of them did, and they were the ones who became the Chot Ve'etz and the Shoyim Emayim, but then there were others who did not. And they kept the name Givonim. So the ones who converted were called Nisinim, because Shenosan David Basarim, because David, first Yeshua, and then later on David reconfirmed it, that they were going to be Chot Ve'etz and the Shoyim Emayim, and they were called Nisinim. They're not the ones we're talking about over here. We're talking about the ones who all along remained Goyim. They only accepted the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. So now we're saying of them, they're fools because not one of them ever became a Ger. According to Rashi, you doesn't make that distinction. Marsha says you would have to say that apparently at some point, some of the Nisinim went back to being Goyim. They gave up on Yiddishkeit and went back to being Goyim, and their descendants never bothered ever becoming Gerim again. Either way, we're saying that they're the Abirei Leiv, according to the order. Similarly, Omer Ravashi, so Ravashi says in the same vein, V'holin b'nei Mos Machasya, similar to the Goyim in Mos Machasya, which is where Rav Ashi's yeshiva was located, Abirei Leiv Ninhu, they're also an example of these Abirei Leiv, of these stubborn Goyim. D'hoko chozu b'shvacha d'araisa tre zimni b'shakta, because they see the glory of the Torah twice a year, during the Yarche Kala, they come during Adar and during Elul to hear the halachas of Pesach and the halachas of the Tishrei Yom Tovim, respectively. So twice a year, they see this tremendous gathering of Jewish people and the glory of the Torah that there is there. And yet, not one of the Goyim of Mosim Achasya has ever become a Ger. So we see that they're also the Abirele. Tosfos mentions another point as well. Not only is it that they see this tremendous gathering of Jewish people, Tosfos brings from Rabbi Yehuda Bar Barzilai, who's an early Rishon, wrote an important sefer called Sefer Itim. He says, he brings from the Goyim, from the early Goyim, that when they had these Yarche Kala, when they had these tremendous gatherings of the Jewish people to learn these halachas during the Yarche Kala, there would be a pillar of fire that would come down from Shemayim that would hover over them. And still, so these Goyim and Mos Machasya are seeing that, and still not one of them is motivated, this is a nation that I want to join. Therefore, Ravashi says that's also what we mean by Abirei Leiv. So in other words, we expect Poshet. You think about it, what the Gemara is telling us over here is, you have the Gemara in Pesachim that says why the Eibishter sent the Jewish people in Golus, Kadesh Yitvasku Aleim Gerim. The expectation is as Jews are living in a place for a period of time, it should be that we have enough of a virkung, that we have enough of an effect on the local Goyim, that some of them are motivated to become Yidden. And if not, then either it means that we're falling down on the job, or it means, as in the Gemara over here, that they themselves are Abirei Leiv, that they themselves are stubborn and foolish people, and they're not getting the message.
And they had a common language.
They had a common language, yeah, too, yeah.
They didn't have
the,
until they went to
develop. This is also true, yeah. Okay. Misha Mesei Perek Shlishi. So the focus of this parak, the third parak, continues talking about the dinim of Kriyat Shema. The first part of the parak focuses on the dinim of Misha Mesen, Mutal Lafana. If a person has a person's relative has passed away and he hasn't yet buried him, so he's an Oinen. So what are the dinim of him as far as Kriyat Shema? And then it goes on to talk about the dinim of Kriyat Shema for Shomrim of the body and for the people who are joining the Levaya and so on and so forth. So that brings the Gemara into discussing various issues having to do with Mesen. So the Gemara says, Tanya, lo yahalach odim avesach. So part of what the Gemara is discussing is that they were saying that a person, misha mesen mutal lefanav, is potter from kriyashma and tefillah and tefillin, but don't you have anyway? The Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a braisa, lo yahalach odim avesach baris. A person should not go in a cemetery of tefillin beroshev, a sefer Torah of Israel, while he's wearing tefillin on his head uncovered, or while he's holding a sefer Torah in his arms, the Torah, and he's reading from the Torah. Ve'im oisa kein, and if he does, then he's being over on what the Pasuk says, the one who makes fun of the poor is mocking the one who made him, meaning the Mason are considered poor because they can't be doing mitzvahs anymore. And now you're going over there and showing off your mitzvahs to them and saying, so to speak, like you're saying, haha, I can do mitzvahs and you can't. So you can't do that. So the point is, the Gemara says, so what's the point of mentioning about that he's potter from Kriyat Shema, if anyway you can't say Kriyat Shema with him? And so the Gemara explains the difference between within four Amos and outside four Amos. So this thing about Tefillin or Sefer Torah is only within four Amos. You also have, by the way, Bechlal, I mean, you have dinim in that connection about davening and a basic varis. But again, first of all, if you're davening, if you're saying tefillahs that are among other things for the covered of the mesim, such as minor loshen, then that's fine. But another point is, this is also in the case of the oil. This is why they have the big tub over there in front of it. So that way, you have a mechitza between you, and therefore it's not as much of an issue. Bechlal, you have there's a piece that we say in minor loshen. There's a piece from the Zohar over there. It's also related to these days Tanya. That tzaddikim b'misos. The Gemara is actually going to talk about it soon. Tzaddikim b'misos. And therefore, really, this whole issue of loyeg l'rosh does not really apply so much to tzaddikim, but regular people, then yeah. The Gemara goes on to say, "Tanan abanan hamolach atzomis mimakim l'makim." If a person is carrying bones of a mess from one place to another, hareza lo yitnim b'disakia v'yitnim agav chamur v'yirkav aleihem. He's not allowed to put them into a disakia, which is a double bag. Disakia comes from two words, diu, which means two, and sack, which means a sack. I once heard as a joke, by the way, somebody said that must have been the last word that was said by the Tower of Babel before Hashem scrambled all the languages. But you see that so many words have the same. You see that so many languages have the same word for a sack. Anyway. So the disakia then is the way you would put on a donkey is you would have a double sack that's connected together with a buckle or something, and you'd have one hanging on one side and the other hanging on the other side, and that way it's not overburdening the donkey. So you're not allowed to put the bones in a disakia, v'yitnem agav chamur, and put them on the donkey, v'yirkav aleihem, and ride on them, sitting on top of the bones, because that's treating them with bizoyin. You can't treat the bones of a mess that way. But if he's afraid of goyim, so he has to ride as fast as possible, or he's afraid of listim, of robbers, then mutter, then he would be allowed to do that, because then it's not a bizoyin for the bones. And the braise continues, the same rules that apply to bones apply to a sefer Torah, and the Gemara goes on to explain what it means is primarily the first part, that you're not allowed to sit on it. It applies more to the second part, that even if there's listim or goyim, then you're allowed to do differently than you would. Now, you have machlokas aposkim, what exactly is allowed at that point? The Rambam says when you're riding on an animal holding a sefer Torah, you should be holding the sefer Torah in your lap. If there's goyim or listim, if there's a problem with goyim or listim, the most you're allowed to do is put the sefer Torah, sling it behind your back, and carry it that way, but absolutely not to sit on it, even if it's a problem of goyim or listim. And then there are other posts can discuss that and say maybe not necessarily so. There is, by the way, a different halacha that talks about where you can have a case where you have to save a sefer Torah. You're actually allowed to wrap yourself in it. You wrap the ureus around yourself, literally like a shirt or something, and do it that way in order to save the sefer Torah from bizoyim. So that at least maybe you have a hetter or two, but to sit on the sefer Torah, even if you're running away from goyim or listim or whatever, not necessarily. The Gemara continues, Amar Rach va Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Kola Royas a mess va inim alavehu, if a person sees a mess, if a person sees a Levaya, and he doesn't join the Levaya, then he's over on the same thing that we just said. He's mocking the poor, the mess, and by that he's making fun of Hashem who created it. Meaning, in other words, Maharsha says like this: we know that gemilas chasadim with a mess is chesed shel emes. So like this, when a person doesn't join a levaya, it's as if he's saying, well, you know what? This guy is not going to be able to pay me back anyway. Even Hashem is not going to be able to pay me back. So why should I bother? That's the cheder for yisegu. Iyun Yaakov points out another point about it that, not Iyun Yaakov, but Anaf Yosef says like this: when you join in a levaya, you're demonstrating that you believe that the neshama still continues to exist, and that the and one will come back by Tchias Mason. Otherwise, if you don't believe in it, yeah, why bother with a levaya? The body's dead. Fine, then you dispose of it and have done with it. So the very fact that you join the levaya shows that you believe in Tchias Mason, and a lack of doing that shows a lack of belief. And the Gemara continues, right? If he does join in the Levaya, what's his reward? Amar Abasi, all of our Pasuk of Omer, the Pasuk says about such a person, Mal v'Hashem, Chonin Dal, Omechabdei Chonin Evren. The one who lends to Hashem is the one who is doing kindness for the poor, and the one who honors him is doing kindness for the needy. So Rashi says two possibilities. One is that it means that if a person is choin and dal, does kindness for the poor, and the poorest person is the mess who no longer can do mitzvahs, then so to speak, you're lending Hashem. So therefore, you get a sky as if you were lending money to Hashem. The second explanation is malva maloshim levaya. So when a person joins in with the levaya, lames, then Hashem will give him then so malva, if he joins in the levaya, Hashem choin and dal, then Hashem will give him, that person who joined the levaya, Hanina will give him grace. Okay. Actually, we have a few more minutes. It's for 25, rather. Yeah. Okay, so we have a few more minutes. Doesn't matter if the difference, what?
Make any difference who the person is,
Lechora not. I mean, so the truth is, there's a Gemara in Tzubas that talks about how many people you need to have by a levaya in order that at that point you can say, we have enough, we don't need more, we don't need to be Mavato Talmud Torah for it. So the Gemara discusses whether there's a difference between a person who did mitzvahs, a person who learned Torah, a person who taught Torah, where you have Lamanda Mas, in Lashir, that you have a person taught Torah, there's no limit, no matter how many people there are by the levaya, it's always appropriate to be Mavato Torah in order to join in his levaya. But you have different levels over there of different numbers of people. At any rate, you always need at least a minimum. But yeah. So the Gemara continues. Rav Chiya and Rav Yochanan have a shakli va'azu de Beis HaKvaris. One time Rav Chiya and Rav Yochanan, and Rav Yonasan rather, were walking through a Beis HaKvaris. Have a kashadya tzchelte de Rav Yochanan, Rav Yonasan. Rav Yonasan's tzitzis were dragging on the ground. Omele Rav Chiya dalye. So Rav Chiya tells him, pick it up. It shouldn't be on the ground. You don't want the mason to say, look at this. These people soon are going to be by us. Eventually, they're going to die as well. And now they're mocking us and saying, ha ha, we have tzitzis and you don't. So it's not appropriate. Now, Mephoshim points out over here, Iyun Yaakov points out, Bechlau, you're not supposed to have your tzitzis drag on the ground anyway. So what are we saying? Only in a basic chorus is there a problem. So one thing is that there's a difference between in those times when they wore tzitzis on their regular garments. Their regular garments had four corners, and they put tzitzis on them. So therefore, you can't expect that a person should take off his clothes when he's going to the Beis HaKvaris. So therefore, fine, let him have the tzitzis on his clothes, but at least they shouldn't be having him drag on the ground. And the rest of the time also, if they drag on the ground, it's not as big a deal because it's part of his clothing. Mashenkin, nowadays, we wear a talis katan or a talis gadol, especially for the mitzvah, so then it's not appropriate to have the tzitzis drag on the ground, the chlal, and then when it comes to going to a Beis HaKvaris, you either have to remove them, or as we generally do nowadays, you tuck them in. So, and that way, you're avoiding this problem of loyig l'rosh. So Rabbi Yonasan says, what's the problem? Umiyadi kulei hai. Do the mason really know that much anyway? Doesn't the pasuk say the dead don't know anything? So they don't know. So what do they mean? They're going to know that our tzitzis are on the ground and they're going to object. Omalei, so Rav Chiya tells him, im korisa, you may have learned Tanakh, because you learned this pasuk in Kehelas. Lo shamnisa, you obviously didn't review it. Otherwise, you would know it better. Vim shamnisa lo shilasha. If you've learned it a second time, you obviously didn't learn a third time. Vim shilasha lo pirshalachayata. And if you already learned it three times, obviously they didn't explain it to you well. Once you understand what the pasuk is saying, you'll realize that it has nothing to do with what was said. when it said, when the pasuk said, now the pasuk goes like this. Ki achayim yodim shiyamusu, v'amesim enim yodim ma'um. And then the pasuk continues on. So, ki achayim yodim shiyamusu, when it says the living know that they're going to die, elu tzaddikim shad misasim kruim chayim. This refers to the tzaddikim. Even after they die, they're still called alive. They're still called alive. So they know that eventually they're going to die. So therefore they're careful to stay away from Averis to begin with, and therefore and they're called Chayim because even after they die they're still called Chayim. Shenema, as we find the pasuk, Uvno Yahu ben Yehoyada ben Ishchai Rav Ha'olam Mikatzel. The pasuk is listing, the pasukim are listing over there David's various mighty men and heroes in his army, the top echelons of his officers. So it mentions Benayahu ben Yehoyada was the son of a living man. There's actually a Kriu Ksiv over there, because you have the Ksiv over there is Chai, and the Kri, the way we actually read it, is Chayil. So it was Ben Ishchayil, a mighty, valiant man. Rav Ta'olim, who accomplished tremendous things. Mikavtzel, simple meaning of Kavtzel, is the name of the city in the territory of Shevet Yehuda. Hu Hikor Shnei Ariel Moyav. The passage says he struck the two powerful lions of Moab, who yarad the hikras hariba sechaburbi and asholag, and he went down and killed a lion in a pit on a snowy day. So now the Gemara is going to dash in phrase by phrase about these accomplishments of Benayahu ben Yehoyada and what they really mean. But the first one is Ben Ishchai, Otter Kulam of Nemesininu. So what is everybody else, the son of a dead person? Why is there a ksiv over there, Ben Ishchai? Ela ben Ishchai shafilu b'misasei koru chai, means this is the kind of person where even after he dies, he not only he but also his father. So earlier in the Masechta we had when it mentioned Benayahu ben Yehoyada and Yehoyada ben Benayahu, and it, we explained, Tosfos explained over there that Benayahu ben Yehoyada's father was the head of the Sanhedrin. So therefore Benayahu now can be described as Ben Ishchai, the son of a person where even after he passed away is still considered alive. So therefore, we see this is an example of tzaddikim b'misasim kruim chayim, which connects very directly with the Tanya that we have these days. And then we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with more of this Durasha. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula, Yud Beis Cheshvan. People ask, what I've said, what's the world going to say, and what are the Goyish nations going to say that we're trying to do, that we're doing the avodah of Yefutza minus Secha Chutza, and we're bringing closer the Ge'ula Amitis HaShleima? They didn't understand what all that's about. They understand maybe that's a very tremendous, great avoda, but people are going to say, don't you have to consider how the world understands things? How can you be doing things that they don't even have any clue of what this is all about? So the answer is that Rebbe says the world is already ready. When a yid does the avoda the way it's supposed to, l'maylam and medidav akbala, beyond any limits and beyond any boundaries, and is still within as melubush in the kalim of lubush ateva. He does it in a natural way with the kalim of the world, but he still does it in a way, in an unbounded way. He will see that in fact the world and the nature of the world and the nature of the Goyish nation are going to help him with his avodah. Halachas, talking further about the halachas of brachas. So we talked about last time that if a person is eating pasabah b'kisnin, which we said there were a few different definitions what that is, if a person eats a shiur kriya suda of it, then he has to wash and make a motzi and the whole 9 yards. We said a few possibilities. It can mean a pie that's filled with certain kinds of fillings. It can mean dough or cake or whatever that's made with fruit juice or whatever. So now, how do we figure what's a shiur kriya suda? We don't go according to the individual person, we go according to most people. However much people usually eat for lunch or evening in order to fill up, if a person eats that shiur, even if he himself is not full, then it would still have the dinim of bread. And you'd have to wash for it. He brings over here, the Alter Rebbe says in Shulchan Aruch that the amount would be over like a gogolos, would be a shiur challah for two sudas, one second. And then in the Siddur, in Seder Birkas Hananim, the Alter Rebbe says that anywhere between six average size eggs, and that would be, then you'd first say Hamotzi on something else, and say Birkas Hamazon to be Motzi, to be Yotzi the Divrei Hakol. If it's between four and six eggs, then you'd say Mizonis and Alamichya, and if you're full, then you'd wash and say Hamotzi and Birkas Hamazon, and if it's less than four eggs, then you should say Hamotzi on other bread. One practical example of this, they talk about pizza, for example. Generally speaking, Rabbi Marlow said back in the day, that if you eat two slices of pizza, that's enough to be a kriya suda, because most people will consider two slices of pizza a full meal, even though you yourself might eat three or four, but most people will eat two, and that'll fill them up. Therefore, you'd have to wash for it. Chanan, Menachash, Emetzar, Kodesh, Baruch, Hu, Zakas, Yisrael, Fishel, Lanchan, Mitzvahs, Shanem, Adonai, Chofetz, Matzipi,